Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Corey, how you doing?
Dalton, I'm too blessed to be stressed, just trying to stay away from the corona craziness in college football.
Yeah, I guess tonight was a bad night to ask how you're doing, because with most of us college football fans, today has been a rough day. I got to mention Ian Blair on the boards with us again tonight, and we'll be talking with Ian quite a bit later on in the show. But lots to get into tonight. It was fun while it lasted, boys and girls. The thought that college football would be played as scheduled and that everything would at least work swimmingly as we head into September. But obviously things have changed over the weekend, and today the news cycle has been basically nonstop. So, Corey, to start the show, we'll try to cover this college football situation. And like I said, today the news cycle has been absolutely insane. And really ever since the Mid-American Conference announced on Saturday that they would be the first football bowl subdivision conference to postpone their 2020 season. Of course, we had other conferences, some FCS conferences and lower tier conferences that announced that they would not be playing. And we had a couple of other schools. UConn last week became the first school to announce it, the first FBS school to announce they wouldn't play. Old Dominion from Conference USA, they also announced they're postponing their season. But really, it was the Mid-American Conference on Saturday that started these dominoes that appear like they're teetering and tottering right now and getting ready to fall any second. But after the Mid-American Conference made that announcement on Saturday, things got crazy yesterday with ESPN reporting that most of the presidents for the Big Ten schools were also in favor of calling off football for this fall. And keep in mind, Corey, this came days after the Big Ten announced their schedules and that they would attempt to begin the season on September 5th. So Big Ten, I kind of found it weird at the time that the SEC and ACC and some of these other conferences said, we're going to play conference only, okay? We'll give you that. But we are going to delay the start of the season until September 26th. Big Ten, they said they were going to play conference only, and they were actually the first conference to say that. But then they had scheduled the start of their season for September 5th. So keep that in mind. And they just released their schedule last week. But their indecision reportedly spurred an emergency meeting among the Power Five conference commissioners on Sunday. Reports came out later last night that no decisions were made at that point. Okay, so let's fast forward to today. We had Paul Feinbaum on the morning show on Mobile Mornings this morning around 8:15. We were discussing this with him earlier, but reports began surfacing after the morning show, right around 10 o'clock, that the Big Ten had held a vote and that every school president except for Nebraska and Iowa voted in favor of postponing the season. And that was interesting in itself. So it seemed like story over, right? But then you had Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh, Ohio State coach Ryan Day, Nebraska coach Scott Frost, and Penn State coach James Franklin. They all tweeted and voiced their support for playing this season and said it's actually safer for these players to be on campus. We've taken care of all the protocols. We're testing them constantly. It is safer for them to be here with us playing football than it is to be back at home. And then, after all that came out, word is that there was actually no vote held by the Big Ten leaders, and that that was actually, I don't know, a straw poll or something to just get the feelings of the commissioners. So no official announcement has been made yet with the Big Ten, but the Pac-12, they're expected to kind of follow suit if or when the Big Ten finally makes that announcement official. And that leaves the SEC, Big 12, and ACC with some decisions to be made. The SEC and ACC, as of right now, they appear to be ready to move forward. The Big 12 kind of on the fence right now. Corey, your initial reaction this morning when it looked like the Big 10 was ready to fold it up?
Well, I'm going to go backwards a little bit. I'm going to go back to the Mid-American Conference and how that affects Mobile, Alabama and the Mobile, Alabama Bowl. Because you're talking about a conference that here we don't hear a lot from until it's bowl season. And you start talking about the MAC being comprised of Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan, Akron, Ball State, Bowling Green, Buffalo, Kent State, Miami of Ohio, Northern Illinois, Ohio, and Toledo. Mm-hmm. So these are teams that we've seen come down to the Mobile Alabama Bowl before. So that's how it starts affecting our community here locally. And you start to take tremendous notice when that domino began to fall. And, you know, I don't like to play the game of dominoes, but the domino effect and the way this continues to go when you start talking about the Mountain West today and some of the tremendous matchups that are being eliminated from a false sports standpoint. And then you go on to where you start talking about the Big Ten. And then when you start having coaches and the president of the United States start tweeting as well, hashtag we want to play, that lets you know that the players and coaches really want to get after it. And like Nick Saban said, they feel more safer on campus. But when you do have outside presidents or who are ultimately going to have the last say-so in all of these decisions, the presidents, not the athletic directors, but the presidents of these universities, they're going to have to weigh the risk-reward situation. Penn State, a week ago, already mentioned zero fans for them in the Valley. And Dalton, I hate to say this, but the more and more dominoes that begin to fall, I think the more and more pressure begins to become on not only the presidents, but also whether we're going to have college football or not.
Well, you said it. The decision rests in the hands of the school presidents, not the athletic directors, not the coaches. And we'll get into what some of these coaches have been saying. And Nick Saban spoke with ESPN earlier today. And, of course, Najee Harris has been outspoken about this and Trevor Lawrence. And it doesn't even rest with the players. Although I will say, looking at how today has gone, I certainly think that with the Big Ten coaches speaking out and some of the players saying, we want to play. Najee Harris said, I'm willing to sign something right now that gets rid of the liability for the school. I just want to get out there and play football. Well, Ross Dellinger, who was on with Paul Feinbaum to begin the show today, and he's with Sports Illustrated. He's been as clued in on this news as basically anyone. If you want to follow somebody on Twitter who's going to give you the news on all these cancellations and postponements, after you follow Corey and myself, make sure you follow Ross Dellinger. But he tweeted earlier that tomorrow, Tuesday, could be a significant day in college football history. Pac-12 and Big 12 presidents will meet tomorrow. The Big 10 presidents meet tonight for a final vote, so I don't know if we'll hear from the Big 10 tonight or tomorrow. He said the ACC is scheduled a meeting on Wednesday, and the SEC presidents actually met earlier today, but no vote is expected. And then, as I mentioned, Ralph Russo with the Associated Press, he kind of summed it all up with the Power Five conferences. He said the Big Ten and Pac-12 are trending towards not playing. The SEC and ACC plan to move forward with their schedules, and the Big 12 is on the fence. And they also kind of made a comparison with some of these Group of Five conferences and the Power Five conferences and how they're related. So, for instance, will the Sun Belt postpone their season if the SEC postpones their season? We already saw the MAC canceled their season. They're obviously tied in quite a bit with the Big Ten. Midwestern Conference, you mentioned it a while ago, they canceled this afternoon their season, although they said they're going to allow the Air Force to maybe set up an independent schedule if they'd like. But the Mountain West, I'd say they're tied into the Pac-12. So what does that mean for the Sun Belt? I think their decision will ride on whatever the SEC decides later this week. But when you look at the reports coming from last night and early this morning, they said, oh, and I'm talking about reporters here, they said, well, Big Ten, once they fold it up for the year, that means every conference will do the same. But that's not what it's looking like right now. The SEC and ACC still seem like they intend to at least hold out as long as possible, which the date that was given by the NCAA last week to make that decision would be by August 21st. So they have a couple more weeks left to make that decision. But the SEC leaders and players have been pretty outspoken. Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the league, he tweeted earlier today, best advice I've received since COVID-19, be patient. Take time when making decisions. This is all new, and you'll gain better information each day. He added, the SEC has been deliberate at each step since March. We slowed the return to practice and delayed the first game to respect the start of the fall semester. He is the first commissioner of one of these Power Five leagues I've seen be as outspoken about playing this year. And then Nick Saban, who is probably as important or more important a voice in the SEC than Greg Sankey, he was on ESPN earlier today. He said, I want to play. I want to play for the players' sake, the value they can create for themselves. Of course, there he's talking about the NFL draft value coming up for a lot of the players down the road. He said, I know I'll be criticized no matter what I say, that I don't care about player safety. Players are a lot safer with us than they are running around at home. We have around a 2% positive ratio on our team since the 4th of July. It's a lot higher than that in society. We act like these guys can't get this unless they play football. They can get it anywhere, whether they're in a bar or just hanging out. And he points out that the attention right now isn't being directed at universities and getting students into classes and out of classes and schooling.
right now all the attention is being paid to these college football programs, which in the grand scheme of things, these big-time programs that have put a lot of money already into making it as safe a situation as possible so they can play ball, it's probably the safest place on campus.
I agree, Dalton. Nebraska estimated it would lose between $80 and $120 million this football season, along with the Crimson Tide of Alabama, those being your Power 5 schools who are big dogs on the pecking order.
Yeah. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. We want to play, hashtag we want to play, and we'll pretend that the SEC will play this year and talk about those new schedules that were released on Friday. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead, this is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
All right, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty with you on this Monday night. Ian Blair on the boards for us. And, well, I want to get into the SEC scheduling here in just a minute. Also, South Alabama, they, well, what postponement? That's what South Alabama said today as they hit the field in full pads for the first fully padded practice of the 2020 season. And right now they're saying all systems go for the Sun Belt, at least the players on the field and the coaches are. Who knows what's going on with the athletic directors? And hopefully next week we'll talk with Athletic Director Joel Erdman with the University of South Alabama. He's been a great guest before, awesome man to talk to, and hopefully we'll have some answers by next Monday night when and if we talk to him. But I do want to get into the SEC scheduling here in a minute. But first, to kind of wrap up where we stand right now with the fate of the 2020 college football season. The players really took to the internet, maybe too little too late. Of course, the Pac-12 just, was that a week ago, 2 weeks ago? Time kind of all melds together during this whole coronavirus situation. But the Pac-12 players kind of, I guess, semi-united and put out an article in the Players Tribune, I believe, saying that they basically were, you know, working on a players association and they were demanding certain things from their schools and from their teams if they were going to play football this fall. And that kind of went more nationwide over the weekend. If you look at some of the tweets from, well, from the most popular player in college football this year and the likely number one overall pick in the 2021 draft, regardless of whether or not there's college football played this year, Trevor Lawrence was very vocal over the weekend and really took a leading role for the players that want to play football this year and be on the field. You probably saw quite a few of them that were using that hashtag, we want to play. Alabama running back Najee Harris was the most outspoken of the Tide players, and part of that Zoom conference call that I guess 30 players from the Power 5 hopped on Sunday before or Saturday before they started tweeting all these things. But yeah, hashtag we want to play really took off, and then they kind of all put out a joint statement and had a graphic that they put out there that said they want to play the 2020 season, but they were also, and this is kind of being looked over right now by a lot of people, they're saying, look, the players want to play. Mm-hmm. Don't forget the other things they asked for there. They said they want uniform health and safety protocols for dealing with the pandemic. And they also laid out their intentions to form a college football players association in the future, which if you ask a lot of people around the nation right now, that might be what schools and school presidents and athletic directors are more worried about than the actual virus itself. That's the players forming a union. And, you know, who knows what that could mean down the road, but it's something that many people have been calling for the players to do for a while. But first, I want to talk about this uniform health and safety protocols that they called for, Corey, because this is where the NCAA, I believe, really stepped in it. I commend the NCAA and Mark Emmert for saying, really, when it comes down to it, it comes down to the conferences, and it comes down to the schools making their decisions about whether they want to play this year or not. But from the get-go, they had plenty of time to prepare for this compared relative to other sports. I mean, with March Madness being canceled back in March, I find it hard to believe that they didn't get started on this immediately, but at least putting out uniform health and safety protocols for these teams to follow, they should have had those ready to go by June or earlier, really. I mean, we've been dealing with this virus for 5 or 6 months now, so NCAA wasn't really, you know, quick to put those protocols out there, but the players banding together, hashtag we want to play, this could have ramifications far further than the coronavirus pandemic. And hopefully the pandemic is, you know, a byline here in a couple years, and we're not talking about it as much as we are right now. But these players
forming a union, that will be the story for years to come.
I think the story of years to come is going to be the disbanding of the NCAA. We probably won't see the NCAA because many people are calling for a college czar, because right now the NCAA dictates and governs all the conferences, and that's just not going to work in today's standards. But I'm hats off to the players for staying united, wanting to play football, and having certain demands about what they want. But more importantly, I think prior to the coronavirus, the name, image, and likeness was the biggest topic of concern, because you had certain states like California and Florida suing the NCAA, saying, hey, look, we want to pay our student athletes. And that was a huge topic of discussion for so long. And now you start talking about the coronavirus testing and certain abilities to get conference revenue among conference athletes in their prospective sports. And that's going to be huge coming down the pipe. And I think the NCAA here within the next couple of years, you just won't see it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about high school football. And this isn't a prep sports show. You can catch all that news with Corey LeBounty right here on Saturday mornings, Prep Sports Report from 8 to 10 a.m. What's your feeling if the SEC, let's play some scenarios out here, if the SEC does end up postponing or canceling this fall season, and let's go ahead and say the Sun Belt follows suit, or maybe even announces before the SEC that they will not play this fall, is there any world in which the Alabama High School Athletic Association can put high school players out there on the field when they are not playing in Tuscaloosa or Auburn or Mobile or Birmingham?
I think there is, Dalton. And the reason I say that, I had that discussion with a particular coach today, as a matter of fact. Would it be safe to do so, and why would you do so if you see certain colleges shutting it down? Because I think that it's a situation to where in high school, again, if you feel unsafe with your child participating, don't send them. It's an option as to whether you want them to play or not. Now, do I think we'll finish the season? I think that that's going to be a speed bump, or lots of speed bumps, to try to finish the season. Do I think we're going to kick off the high school football season? I do.
That's I'm glad to hear the optimism. And I do think that if the SEC plays and if Sun Belt teams are playing, I could totally see the AHSAA going on with this. But I'm just picturing the parents right now. And you're right, they don't have to send their kids out there. Well, the college parents, their kids don't need to play either if they don't want them to, even though most of the college student athletes are, I would say, grown enough to make that decision themselves.
There,
but let's be honest, they can decide to opt out if they don't want to either. And right now it appears that they are not being given they are given the decision to opt out, but they are being told they can't play by their conference commissioners. So, you know, this story, I don't think it'll be wrapped up this week. We might find out from the Big Ten tonight or tomorrow that they're going to cancel, and we might hear from the Pac-12 after that. Still think it'll be a while before we hear from the SEC and the ACC. But let's say the SEC does play while I'm playing these scenarios here. It was a great day on Friday before all this news started coming out on Saturday. And the SEC Network, they had this nice big program where they unveiled the two extra opponents for each SEC team for this conference-only 2020 schedule. At first, they were wondering, well, how are they going to do this? Because each team every year, they play their six divisional opponents, and then they play their crossover teams from the other division. Now, normally, those would be the annual matchups. Like for Alabama, we see them play against Tennessee and Georgia every year. For Auburn, they kind of rotate one of those opponents every single year, and of course, they play Georgia every year as well. But they needed two more opponents. So a lot of people were saying, why don't we go into 2021 and the 2022 schedules, add those opponents to the schedules? And some were saying, why don't they set up a power ranking system here, a strength of schedule system, and then divvy up the opponents based on that? Whoever has the hardest 2020 schedule, we'll give them two of the easier SEC opponents. Whoever has the easiest 2020 schedule, we'll give them the hardest SEC opponents. Well, the SEC said no and no to both of those ideas. They said, we will decide who these teams will play. And that ended up giving us some pretty funny draws for some of these teams. So Alabama, they'll now face Kentucky in Tuscaloosa and Missouri on the road. That's in addition to the six conference games or six divisional games and their annual matchups against Georgia and Tennessee. I'd say that's a pretty good draw for Alabama, Kentucky and Missouri. Would you say so, Corey?
Yeah, I mean, I like that matchup for Alabama. Nothing too tough there. I mean, you just have to take care of your business week to week, but it's definitely not anybody where it could have been a Florida or somebody a little bit stronger there.
No doubt. Auburn, they're going to face Tennessee and hit the road to take on South Carolina, so not an awful draw for Auburn, albeit a little bit more difficult than Alabama's draw. LSU has it relatively easy, too. They added games against Missouri and Vanderbilt. I'm kind of getting the idea, looking at this, that the SEC did what some of these other conferences started doing, and that is, in a way, sheltering their best teams. And I don't think it's necessarily because they don't want to see Alabama lose or they don't want to see Georgia lose. It's because they want to have, you know, before all this happened this weekend and we were still planning on having a college football playoff, they want to at least see their teams have their best shot at making it into that college football playoff. And if you go ahead and give Auburn two incredibly difficult teams and Alabama two incredibly difficult teams, you just make the road that much harder for your best teams to show up unbeaten or with only one loss in that college football playoff. Arkansas, God bless them. They have easily, I mean, their 2020 schedule was already ridiculous. I think it ranked in the top five strength of schedule in the entire nation. And Arkansas ends up with Florida and Georgia from the SEC East. So it wasn't exactly an even way that they, you know, divvied these teams up for each team's schedule, but it is starting to make sense to me that I do think the SEC kind of tried to shelter their top teams in order to get them through the season with as few blemishes on the record as possible.
You know, it's all about money, but when you start looking at the matchups, I mean, Auburn, Tennessee at home, last time Auburn took on Tennessee at home didn't work out too well for them. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at LSU, they have a lot of retooling to do. Alabama, of course, is going to be Alabama. You don't take anything for granted. Texas A&M, Florida at home, that's a tough game. Tennessee on the road. So there's going to be some great matchups still.
No doubt about that. All right, we're coming back. More Sports Night. We'll talk a little South Alabama football, NBA, and NHL coming up right here on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. The dulcet tones of Danzig bringing us into this segment. And it's been all football talk to this point, and we'll talk a little bit more football before we move into some of the other sports from this past weekend and also the upcoming NHL playoffs and NBA playoffs, which are also on the way. They start next Monday night. But, Corey, good news today. Well, one particular bit of good news today. The rest hasn't necessarily been great news. But South was on the field for their first padded practices of the 2020 season. That came after the Sun Belt last week announced that they were planning on moving forward with their season. Who knows where that stands now? But I was happy to see they were out there on the field. And if you check out USAJaguars.com, that oh-so-lovable daily practice report that I love to read. But the big news for South last week, after the Sun Belt announced you could play conference games, you could play non-conference games, we want to play 12 games, and we want to try to get this season underway. Well, South had already lost two opponents to their schedule because of previous coronavirus cancellations, and that would have been first Grambling State from the SWAC conference, and that was supposed to be the home opener for South in that brand-new Hancock-Whitney Bank Stadium there on campus. But that was the first one canceled, and then with the SEC moving to a conference-only schedule, that did away with that Week 3 away game in Gainesville against the Florida Gators. Well, they have at least added one game to make up one of those two games that was canceled, and they will now be playing Tulane in Week 2 of the season. Because of that, the Jags moved their first game, which was scheduled at Southern Miss. They moved that up by 2 days and will now hopefully open the season on Thursday, September 3rd, and will open the campus stadium, the Hancock-Whitney Bank Stadium, against Tulane on September 12th. Great news. South and Tulane have played before. South won 41-39 back in 2013, and then they're on the schedule three more times in the coming years, 2023, 2025, and 2026. And it looks like at least some students at this point, before any more announcements come out, at least some students and fans will be able to be in attendance for that first game against Tulane. They put out a press release late last week or over the weekend and said that they will allow attendance to up to 25% of the stadium's total capacity. That'll allow people to have big space between their groups of seats. You can't have more than five people sitting together. They said suites will be limited to 10 people. They're going to limit the Hargrove Club also to a 25% capacity. and screening, temperature checks, pretty much the same thing that you're seeing at these other places that have announced they're going to try to have fans in attendance. Hopefully this sticks. Hopefully we have football to watch. But let's talk as if it's going to happen. And Tulane, I like that matchup for the home opener.
Yeah, the Green Wave, anytime you can get a school within a probably two-hour radius, that's good football because they'll bring maybe a couple of fans there and to where it's a situation to where you do have border wars with New Orleans mm-hmm. and the state of Louisiana in regards to recruiting. So if you're able to knock off Tulane, Conference USA opponent, you'll feel pretty good about the direction of your program. And that's Grambling would have been an outstanding opening game. But again, bringing in Tulane, which has had success in the past, I think the Green Wave coming to Mobile, hopefully they'll wash themselves right back out with a loss.
And let's be honest, South has had they've already got at least one great win on their resume with that win against Mississippi State a few years back. But this is still a program on its baby giraffe legs in the grand scheme of things. And that's why it's so important to build these rivalries while we can. So, of course, you have your Sun Belt rivalries that will hopefully be played this year. But look at those first three games. Southern Miss, Tulane, and UAB, three schools that – South could definitely develop a rivalry with and are in the midst of developing with the UAB situation.
Yeah, the only bad thing, Dalton, that I hate for the fans is that there's going to be no tailgating because that takes away the whole entire month of September, no tailgating. So that part is tough, and they'll continue to reevaluate it in the month of October. That takes away from kind of the game day experience. But at this point in time, I think if you're thirsty and hungry for football, it doesn't matter if it's an empty stadium. It doesn't matter what the situation is. You just want to put toe to leather
yep.
on that first game at Hancock-Whitney this season, 2020 style.
Well, there is no, and I'll use the quotations here, no tailgating. There won't be any big tailgate tent parties, but I imagine you mentioned hungry and thirsty a little bit earlier. There's going to be some hungry and thirsty people that maybe meet at someone's dorm or house before those games. So hopefully the Sun Belt carries on, and hopefully we get to see South open that stadium this year. But it's some college news that's now completely ancient. The USA Today Amway preseason coaches top 25 poll was released last week. And we can go ahead and start marking some of these teams off if you're like me and you believe the Big Ten and Pac-12 will definitely cancel their fall season. So you had Clemson came in ranked first in the poll. Ohio State number two. Go ahead and mark them off. That moves the Crimson Tide, who were ranked number three, up to number two in my book. And pretty great for Alabama. 11th season in a row that they're going to enter the season ranked in the top three. They're followed by fellow SEC teams Georgia and LSU to round out the top five there. Then at number six, Big 12 favorite Oklahoma. They're followed by Penn State, Florida, Oregon, Notre Dame. We'll see about Notre Dame. Auburn comes in ranked 11th, and SEC looks good here. It's every opponent that's on Arkansas' schedule, but six ranked teams in the SEC, with Texas A&M coming in ranked 13th. So pretty cool to see a preseason coaches poll come out there, but they're going to have to rework that after these next couple of weeks for sure.
And again, you start talking about the SEC's dominance with Alabama 3, Georgia 4, LSU 5, and then right there in the top 10 with Florida. What kind of surprised me is Auburn outside of the top 10 at 11. I thought that ranking was kind of high for the Auburn Tigers. They're going to have to go out and prove themselves. And Dalton, you know, the biggest thing is, for what the SEC announced on Friday with the 10-game schedule, with the addition of the two opponents, 8+2, you're just happy at that point in time last Friday that you were going to get some great matchups. Top 10-wise, you can kind of throw that out depending on the dominoes that continue to fall these next couple of days, and we'll be able to kind of sort that out. But I like Ryan Day and Coach Harbaugh going to bat for their players, mm-hmm. saying they want to play. And if you don't think these guys, these head coaches, can kind of influence, and I said earlier in the show that the presidents will have the last decision of these universities, but if you don't think that those two guys within the Big Ten won't have a say-so, they're going to try to find a way, any way possible, to play football.
That's certainly what they're lobbying for right now. Ben sent us a text, and you can send us a text, too, at the text line 343-0106. He said, it sure seems like it's easier to do all or nothing when it comes to college football. The folks in charge need to hurry up and make a decision. But, Ben, that's the problem. The folks in charge are only in charge
Who's
of
in charge?
Their conferences. There's no one in charge of everything. Which you could say that's a good thing or you could say that's a bad thing.
Horrible.
But it seems like the Big Ten is the one Power 5 conference that keeps stepping out there and wanting to make these decisions fast. Well, I know that they say that the athletic directors are meeting every day nearabouts, but the trust me, Greg Sankey, Nick Saban, Gus Malzahn, these SEC coaches and athletic directors, and the commissioner Sankey, they don't want the Big Ten making decisions for them. College football in the SEC, much more important than it is in the Big Ten geographically. Yeah, the people up there just don't care as much about football as they do down here. And I'm sure it brings a lot of money into some of those cities, specifically, you know, up there at Ohio State and Columbus and some of these other places.
Happy Valley, 106,000 seating capacity.
Right. It's big for a couple of those schools. It's not as big as it is for each and every conference school down here in the SEC. When you look at go over to Ole Miss, Mississippi State, this makes up a lot of their revenue having those games on Saturdays. So we'll see. I don't expect, I think it's kind of interesting how this has gone with each conference kind of taking their own route. And we'll see. I don't know. We might have some answers tomorrow or maybe not. We'll get into the NBA some here and then carry it over into the next segment. And I know Ian wants to talk about this some with us too. But the blazing hot Phoenix Suns, 6-0. In the bubble, the only undefeated team. We'll talk about them coming up, but we got to start with New Orleans and their disaster of a stay so far in Orlando. 2-4 in the bubble. They have two games remaining, but were officially eliminated from the playoffs on Sunday after Portland won and the Pels lost to San Antonio. Of course, Zion Williamson left the bubble just before the restart to deal with a family medical situation, and he's looked good on the offensive side of the ball, but he's been pretty dang sloppy on defense. And honestly, Corey, I don't know if you feel the same way I do. He looks to be in pretty poor physical condition for what the team was touting coming into these games.
You know, all that is irrelevant now. You look at coming in about a month and a half ago when we talked to a couple of Pelicans writers about entering the bubble, the playoff chances that the Pelicans had, the softest schedule favored the New Orleans Pelicans. They absolutely floundered down the stretch. You decide to sit Zion. You decide to limit his minutes. You're struggling point guard-wise, and they're eliminated.
Yeah, and it looks like they're making the right decision now by sitting Zion. And I would say hopefully they sit him for the remainder of his time in Orlando. They're definitely not going to play him tomorrow night along with Brandon Ingram and Drew Holiday. They've already announced they're going to sit them for tomorrow night's game. And I would say if you're a Pelicans fan, you hope they sit him for the remainder of their time in Orlando. But yeah, came in 4.5 games behind the Grizzlies, and now they're heading home in just a couple days. All right, we'll come back. More Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Ian Blair on the boards and talking a little NBA as they get ready to start the playoffs 1 week from tonight. Now, it does look like there will be a play-in game in the Western Conference,
yes,
right, with the Memphis Grizzlies. They've kind of almost fallen out of that eighth seed, and Portland's right there neck and neck with them. You got San Antonio and albeit the Phoenix Suns, who have gone 6-0, and Devin Booker just absolutely unbelievable right now. But we were talking about the Pelicans a little bit earlier. Now it appears Alvin Gentry is definitely on the hot seat. He's been on that seat for a couple years now. But rumors coming out that, and this came from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, that maybe Tyronn Lue or Jason Kidd could be the next bench boss for New Orleans. Any thoughts on those guys possibly taking over for Gentry? You got anything for me, Corey?
I don't like Jay Kidd. I think that his time as a player was great, and I understand that he's with the Lakers right now, but I don't like Jay Kidd.
No. All right. Well, we've got the pretty much the Eastern Conference playoff teams are set. Milwaukee, they're locked into the number one seed. Toronto locked into the number two seed. Boston, the number three seed. Then you have Miami, Indiana, and Philadelphia battling for the fourth, fifth, and sixth seeds. Brooklyn locked in at number seven, and Orlando will be the eighth seed and facing Milwaukee come next week. But, Ian, you and I were talking last week a little bit about T.J. Warren with the Pacers and the unbelievable run that he's been on in the bubble. I even said maybe he needs to look at for a trade to Orlando because he's played so well down there. But a big game tonight tips off here in about 10 minutes. Indiana is facing Miami, and everybody's eyes are on T.J. Warren with the Pacers and Jimmy Butler with the Heat. Can you kind of fill me in on their past history? They don't like each other, I take it.
No, they don't. And this has been an ongoing thing since Warren was back in Phoenix and Butler was back in Minnesota. essentially roughly around the time right before Butler got injured in the 2017 to 2018 season. The Wolves were the third seed in the West. TJ thought he was a baby Jimmy Butler, I suppose. And they had some words for each other on the court after Kat basically dunked all over TJ. And it was pretty mean for what it was worth. But Jimmy, ever since, Warren's really kind of struggled in the regular season against Butler, and Butler told him to his face, "I want you in a playoff series so I can make you average a triple-single in efficiency." And that was a not an exact quote, but a paraphrase of what Butler's basically been saying this entire time. They've fought multiple times this year, gotten in each other's faces. I honestly just want to grab my popcorn sometimes and just go, "Can we put some gloves on these guys? Sort of like a ring here?" You know, have like the announcer, "Let's get ready to rumble!"
Yeah.
You know, and just be like right there in the court. But
well, it should be a good time tonight. So I'm going to be clued into that Warren-Butler matchup. And you look over in the West, pretty wide open. I mentioned it earlier with that play-in game. But the Lakers, they've clinched the number one seed, dealing with some pretty paltry offensive numbers right now. Also some injuries and soreness, although they're probably just resting up mostly for this next week. Clippers and Nuggets, they're fighting over the second seed. They have a pretty huge matchup on Wednesday night that could decide who gets that seed. Houston, Oklahoma City, Utah, and Dallas, all within a game of each other for those fourth through seventh seeds. And then I mentioned it earlier, it looks like we're going to have a play-in game in the Western Conference for that eighth seed. Also, NHL playoffs are set. Those will get started here in the next couple of days. And it's really interesting the way the NHL set this up compared to how the NBA did. NBA wanted to wrap up their regular season, invited 22 teams down to the bubble, and then they're going to play their standard 16-team playoff. The NHL decided to kind of jump right into the playoffs, invited 24 teams to Toronto and Edmonton, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, and then played qualifying rounds, best of five series, to see who would get those bottom four seeds in each conference. And then chaos basically ensued. You had some of the best teams that are good year in and year out losing these qualifying rounds. The Penguins, they were the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference. They got beat by the 12th seed, Montreal. Toronto, they got upset by Columbus for the eighth seed. Edmonton, they got trounced by the number 12 seed Chicago Blackhawks, and then Nashville upset by number 11 seed Arizona. So I don't think that went the way that the NHL was planning, but still playoff hockey, so I'm happy with that nonetheless. And then just taking a quick look at baseball here, I know we've here in the studio kind of got our eyes on the Atlanta Braves, and well, not playing too well tonight. Sean Newcomb got the start and absolutely got bombed on. Philadelphia is putting it to the Atlanta Braves right now. But overall, they've been playing pretty well over these first 2 weeks of the season. They had a doubleheader sweep yesterday over the Phillies, 5-2 and an 8-0 shutout win. And Ronald Acuna Jr. finally feeling it at the plate. He hit three home runs yesterday. I think he went 4-for-4 in that second game. So it looks like Acuna is back and ready to ball for the Atlanta Braves. Some other teams from around the league, the LA Dodgers right now are absolutely on fire. They've won 9 of their past 12 games, a plus 29 run differential, and they've homered in 11 straight games. And the Yankees and Aaron Judge, they also had a nice little home run streak going, but they've dropped 3-4 to the Rays over the weekend. Also lost Giancarlo Stanton with a strained left hamstring. We'll see how that affects them on this shortened season. That's another guy. Just can't stay healthy. He signed that huge contract with the Yankees, and he has not been able to stay on the field. Oakland, they've won 9 in a row after they swept the Astros over the weekend. And so there's some teams that are really kind of taken off in this short 60-game season. But we were talking about the virus in college football earlier, and it's certainly already taken its toll in Major League Baseball. Only 2 weeks into the season, the Marlins and now the St. Louis Cardinals are going through what the Marlins went through with these team-wide outbreaks. Now, Miami, they were sidelined for about 8 days, came back on fire, and swept the Baltimore Orioles. But St. Louis, they haven't seen the field since July 29th at this point. They've had several series canceled. They said as of Monday, 27 different MLB games have been postponed so far in the season. That's a bad omen for the rest of the year, Corey.
I mean, you're talking about maybe 5 games already only being played by the Cardinals. But what's interesting to me is when you go back and you look at the Houston and the Oakland game from last night, to where you did have a nice little coronavirus brawl. They were supposed to be it's social distancing, but I didn't see too much of that. But you knew that these beam pitchers were coming toward the Houston Astros players because of the cheating that they were found guilty of going into the season. And if it would have been a regular season, you knew that teams were going to tee off on Astros players, and you just start to see it in every single series, at least one of the games, you're going to see some type of player either being thrown at or some type of altercation between these teams. No one loves the Astros right now.
No, not at all. And it was really the LA Dodgers who took their first shot at the Astros last week. That was the first game where the benches, I guess, were cleared. They didn't necessarily get too close to each other's faces last week, but you're right, they're going to be gunning after these Houston players all year long. It's probably a good thing for them that they're playing 60 games rather than 162 games. Also, before we wrap this up, I want to give props to a couple big winners over the weekend, and because one of these guys was a big winner, I too was a big winner over the weekend. And the PGA Championship, first, and I guess they say it's the only major tournament of this year. It's because this year is actually wrapping up at the beginning of September, but we've got a pretty full list for golf fans coming up with the PGA, not the PGA Championship, but the Tour Championship at the beginning of September. U.S. Open follows that in September. The Masters will be in November this year, and you have the President's Cup coming up in December. So it's an exciting time to be a golf fan, but a 23-year-old winning the PGA Championship yesterday, Colin Morikawa, absolutely stone cold on that par 4 16th hole where he drove it to 7 feet and eagled for the win. So I'm going to give props to Colin Morikawa. And also, Kevin Harvick keeps winning in NASCAR. We'll have to give that more time next week. That does it. Sports Night, FM Talk 106.5. Hopefully, next week we're talking about the SEC going forward with their season. There's a lot to be determined. Have a good one. Corey, have a good one.
Thanks, Dalton.